Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 198 for June 8th, 2009. Emission accomplished. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2 and follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by GoToMyPC. Think remote access to your PC is complicated? Think again. It's easy with GoToMyPC. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMyPC.com/twit. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/twit. And now we're ready to take off. Number one on the runway with Maverick in the lead.
All right, you're clear for takeoff. That's a 1-9-5 twit. I'm going to have you come in heading 1,740 knots.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your laptops in a fully locked and upright position.
That is Tom Merritt from Buzz Out Loud. He made his way up to the Twit Cottage with his lovely wife, Elaine, and it's great to see you both. Thanks for making it up here.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's lovely up here.
You're getting close to your 1,000th BOL.
Yeah, just a couple of weeks away.
Yay!
Very exciting. And you're going to be on.
Me and a lot of other people, I guess.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, but I mean, there's like a ton of folks, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're going to have Scott Johnson. We're going to have Remy. We're going to have listeners.
Martin?
No, Remy, one of our listeners. We're going to have a ton of folks. It's going to be an extravaganza.
What day is it?
Thursday, June 18th.
Awesome.
We're actually doing two shows tomorrow to make sure it's on Thursday.
Why would that? I don't understand.
Because CNET does a regular third Thursday of the week party, and we wanted to siphon off of it.
I now do understand. Yeah. You want to get everybody who's in the studio.
Totally.
Also here, you heard her laugh, Denise Howell, the lovely and talented host of our This Week in Law show, and just a wonderful person in general. She's the author of the Blogarithms column at ZDNet. Is that
you always get me confused with Doug Kay. He writes Blogarithms. I write Logarithms.
Okay, I'm sorry. I added a B.
And Bag and Baggage.
That is confusing. And Bag and Baggage. And we're so glad to have you, Denise. It's good to have you on the show.
It's great to be here.
I'm sorry I'm saying you're Tom Merritt. I'm working on that.
That's
right,
all right
now.
She's a much better picture.
I actually, she's got a good shot there. This is nice. She took a little time off from her Sunday afternoon to be with us. Also, you saw Maverick, Jason Calacanis.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
From Mahalo.com.
Mahalo.
And we've got one newbie in the bunch, and that's Jeff Cannata from the Totally Rad Show. Hey, Jeff.
Hey. It's awesome to be here with all these tech luminaries. I'm in awe of these people that I've been following for so long. It's awesome.
Jeff is just back from E3, so I trust you will have many things to say.
Yes.
About E3. You saw the Beatles, for one thing.
I did. That was and Steven Spielberg, all in the span of 10 minutes.
That's kind of amazing.
That's a big day.
Wow. So we'll talk a little bit about E3 and about Microsoft's Natal and the worst name. Okay, can I say it? The worst name for a project.
I think they're saying Natal, actually.
Yeah, but it's spelled Natal.
Did you hear about port for Palm?
The what?
The prenatal?
You should have saved that for Buzz Out Loud. So the Palm Pre did come out yesterday, and I am holding in my hands, and I'm very happy to say, loving the Palm Pre. And the reason I'm happy to say is because this, I mean, we got to agree, is the last gasp for Palm, right?
Can I ask you a question about that Palm Pre?
Screw you, Jason Calacanis.
I was going to ask it first.
Screw you. Go ahead. Yes, go ahead, Jason, please.
No, I have no question about it, actually. It's fun to know who did you talk to in the PR department to get it.
No, this is, and all right, I think it's fair to ask where I got this. And I tell you, a lot of people were not able to get it at the Sprint store or Best Buy. A lot of them sold out.
Well, they had like two or three per store, right?
Two or three per Best Buy. And some stores, Sprint stores, 25 to 60 or 70. But most of the stores, I think, sold out on Saturday. And I understand more will come in on Monday. But, you know, it's not an Apple reaction. They're not the lines, not the press.
There were lines, but they were short lines.
Yeah. However, I got to say, having played with it, and I think you'll all have a chance to play with it at some point. In fact, here, let me pass it off to you, Tom.
Sure.
This is an elegant device. If the Apple iPhone didn't exist, people would be just raving about this thing. I mean, they'd be going crazy. It's beautiful. The multitasking, the screen, the touch, it's just incredible. I think the iPhone still beats it because of the range of applications and just the maturity of the platform. But this is a really strong effort from Palm. I'm really impressed. I really like it. Are you going to get one, Jason? What do you use? Use a BlackBerry or an iPhone?
I have both. I have both.
And yeah, see, I use the BlackBerry because of the keyboard. But I have to say, the pre-keyboard, it's okay. It's very small. I think I'm more accurate with the Apple keyboard because the pre unaccountably has no type ahead prediction. It doesn't even do what the BlackBerry does, you know. So like the BlackBerry, when you get to the end of the sentence, the Apple iPhone too, it puts a period at the end of the sentence when you hit space twice and then starts a new. This doesn't even do that.
What I want is a phone that has the size of the iPhone screen with the keyboard of the BlackBerry. I don't mind if it's right. A little taller than a normal phone. When somebody makes that, I think they'll have reached the singularity of phones.
I like the size of this. I like the feel of it in my pocket. I think it's okay for this small. It's the same resolution as the iPhone, just a smaller screen.
All I want from a phone is one that I can use from inside my own home. Yeah, I think there should be a when you go shopping for a phone or a phone service, yeah. You should be able to take the phone to your house and see if you can make a phone call.
Are you having trouble? Who's your carrier?
I have an iPhone, so I'm on AT&T.
And you can't make a call out of your
house.
I
have to walk two blocks to make a telephone
call. That's pathetic.
I can't make a call from AT&T in my office suddenly. Like within the past 4 or 5 months, I have to walk outside my office door into the common area. Then I get a signal.
You know, Sprint, people hate Sprint, but Sprint has a very good data network. It works fine for me.
Well, Verizon, I use for data on the laptop.
Verizon's going to get this phone. Yeah. We already know.
That's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, and I don't. The only question is how soon. I guess the question to ask is, okay, so Pri's going to get the weekend coverage. What happens Monday? Does Apple come back and just knock the ball out of the park?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lock.
With what?
Well, I mean, there's this rumor of the tablet
size. That's going to happen Monday. I think it's going to. In fact, a number of people have said, and I think maybe they're right, that this is going to be held off till later in June. This will be the Steve Jobs comeback keynote that won't be at WWDC. The WWDC, they'll say iPhone 3, they'll say Snow Leopard, they'll give, you know, it's a developer conference, and then they'll save the big hardware announcement for a Steve Jobs keynote later in the month.
Do you think they'll save the iPhone hardware announcement for later?
Maybe.
Yeah. It's possible. I hadn't thought about that.
Has Palm put the
will.
Pressure on them? And does this now mean that they have to come out with it?
Yeah, because I think there'll be an uproar if Apple suddenly goes to their keynote and doesn't announce the new iPhone. Even the conservative columnist, Kent German at CNET, is always like, well, I don't know. He's like, yeah, there's going to be a hardware announcement. If they didn't, I think that would just rock people.
So what announcement does Apple have to make to eclipse the pre? What do they have to say?
I don't think they have to do much. I think they just have to have cut and paste, which we already know is there. I mean, it's little things like that, and video, and better battery life. That's enough to make people go, well,
pre-battery life,
I don't
by the way,
switch to Sprint.
Is awful.
I'll go ahead and go to the iPhone. The battery life on that's horrible.
It's terrible. If you're already a Sprint customer, though, this is a very good choice, I think, if you don't want to change to AT&T.
I think that's what's good for, it may be better for Sprint than it is for Palm.
Did you see this? This is the inductive charger. That's so cool.
You have to buy that separate, though.
Yeah, right? $70.
Yeah.
But it's
very cool.
It's got gecko grease on it. And it sticks to anything.
Almost anything.
Hey-o.
Never mind.
Good thing it's a review unit.
You really think that if they just
screw
say,
you, Palm! I'm sorry. Just trying that out. Just trying that out for size.
If they do video on the iPhone, is that a hardware update or a software update?
Well, they can do some with a software update because jailbroken iPhones could do all kinds
of
video.
I have quick on the iPhone, and it's very low frame rate, though.
Exactly.
So if you're going to do decent video, they're going to have to do a hardware upgrade.
Quick on the iPhone is pathetic, and it's not Quick's fault, but the camera is terrible.
What is it?
And the bandwidth is terrible, and the battery life is terrible, which leads to a terrible experience.
Jeff, you were going to say something?
I was just going to say, you really think that if they just come out and announce cut and paste and a few other minor things that people, I think there's an expectation for people to be wowed at this point.
And I'll tell you, it's going to be, I think it's not going to be a wow. It's going to be evolutionary, not revolutionary. And I think the revolutionary platform at this point is the pre. The pre could surprise people if they come, if they move fast, they get applications in there. They already have pushed out a 102 update, which seems to have fixed some of the sluggishness I was experiencing. The multitasking is spectacular. Messages and IMs come in the background, so you see them. The UI is beautiful. You could do other platforms. This is, I mean, I presume Palm's going to do the same thing they did with Palm, with the other Palm stuff, which is make a variety of things around WebOS.
Yeah, I agree. I think the pre is fantastic, and I think it's going to be very good. But the reality distortion field, even without Steve Jobs, I think will come into play.
Well, there's also inertia, isn't there?
And it just kind of pulls the wind out of Palm that they've had their weekend and it's over instead of having months.
There's inertia, and I think that... Tom Peters used to say this. If something's going to be, if you're going to get people to change to a new technology, it has to be 10 times better. It can't be one or two or three times better. It has to be 10 times better to get people to move. That may be the case.
Is the multitasking the killer app? I mean, is that,
it's pretty good.
How does that actually work? Do you, if I have two or three things open, does my phone run slower? Am I
it drains the battery is what it does, but I don't think it, have you found
it
to run slower?
It's a little more sluggish. Launching is not as fast as it would be, but it multitasks pretty well. And it
so
does
is that
it
what the
very
iPhone needs?
I think so. It does it very I'm sorry, I have a picture of your wife on my phone, but that's just sometimes how that happens.
Screw you, Leo.
the way it happens is that each background application becomes a card that you can scroll through, and then you can tap to zoom in, make it full screen, and then slide it off the screen to make it smaller, slide it again to close it. That is elegant.
It's really sweet.
That's pretty sweet. Let you run processes in the background, but they don't allow that flip through.
No, like, you don't even know what's running. You have to kind of figure out what else is going on in the background.
That's the big problem with BlackBerrys. People all the time are like, oh my God, my BlackBerry is running slow. Something's wrong. And it turns out they've just got, you know, sort of like Windows creep on it.
Yeah.
And they got application creep. And that's what this solves it. I don't know. What's the price point? Is $199 for this device?
$299 with a $100 mail-in rebate. And that's why Best Buy is the place to get it.
Yeah, but you buy it at Best Buy, they do the instant rebate. So then you don't have to send any forms in.
Of course, they only have two.
Yeah. That's why it's easy for them to do that.
They need to get the smartphone cost is still prohibitive for mass adoption. They have to get these things down to
Not just the cost of the handset, but the when people see the monthly cost, they really choke.
Too much.
Sprint's doing the $99 everything thing on this, which makes it actually a pretty compelling buy against the iPhone. Yeah, you can get a $70 iPhone.
Well, that's why we're going to hear about an AT&T price change, I think.
I hope so.
They're feeling some heat from that.
And if that's the case, that's why you want to support this competition.
Definitely.
You need to have other smartphone choices. Now, BlackBerry does very well. In fact, BlackBerry beats the iPhone, so it's a good competitor. But I think a three-way race is exciting. I think it's good. And I think that...
Yeah,
John Rubenstein
out either. I
mean, no. The N97 is going to be out any minute now. I can't wait to see that.
I'm constantly excited about the N series and then disappointed once it comes out.
I saw the N97 at the D conference. It looked really ugly. I'll be honest. Like Nokia's, I had the N95. It's like an elegant device. It's kind of interesting. But it looks terrible. It's like a phone that like time forgot. It's like a 5-year-old design. Like, look, it flips open and there's a keyboard inside. I was like, wow, I saw that in 99.
There's a movie tie-in to Land in the Lost there. Or Land.
It really is. It's not... That will never work anywhere outside of Europe. Nobody cares about that, like, ugly-looking phone style. I don't think kids are going to want that either. It's just, when you have an object of art like the iPhone, now you have an object of art like the Palm Pre, and then you have the utilitarian BlackBerry that has an incredible camera on it. I think the camera, I don't know if you guys watch my blog, but... it's a 3.2 megapixel camera. It's starting to look like my digital Rebel. I can't tell the...
No, that's the same on this Pre. And I just took some pictures. Elaine, you just took some pictures. It looks good. The camera is very good. To have a 3-megapixel camera... And, of course, what is the 997? Is it 5 or is it more? It's 5, I think.
I think it's more now.
Is it more
now?
I think the N97
is more than 5.
The 95 was 5. Yeah, you're right. These are cameras and phones.
You don't have to carry the camera anymore. And then when somebody figures out... there are two features that nobody's really figured out. One is... how to make it a Wi-Fi network, like that new Verizon MiFi or whatever.
MiFi, yeah. MiFi is so cool.
Like the Cradle Point. I have the Cradle Point that I put my thing into.
And it's just fiber.
Somebody will make that into their phone, and then that's it. It's like game over. And then, two, if they can figure out how to get a flip video type thing working, where you can get HD video and, you know, kind of store it that's 2 years out. But when those things happen 2 years from now, man, I mean, the idea of carrying multiple devices is going to go away again.
Denise, let me ask you, if Apple makes a tablet, is that a compelling product for you? Is that something you would use? Is that going to replace your phone and your laptop?
I don't think so, no. The thing that I want more than a tablet is an Air, because it's...
What if you could get something...
It's everything and portable, you know?
I guess. What if you could get something so small, smaller than an Air, that would do all of that for you?
I'd certainly look hard at it, you know. Apple has a tendency to make me drool, so... it's funny. I went to the very first D conference years ago now and saw Steve Jobs say, you know, and I'm sure he said it more than once, but just to hear him say it live was pretty funny, that they'd never, ever, ever make a tablet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're never
making a video iPod
either. Then
they make a video. Nobody would want to watch video on anything that small.
Right.
In fact, it's pretty much the case that when Steve Jobs says it's never going to happen, that's when they're about to release it.
So ebook reader.
No netbook.
Yeah. Yeah, they just said no netbook, didn't they?
Yeah, right. I'd like to introduce the Apple.
You think they'll do a netbook? I think they'll do a tablet in lieu of it. No, you think they will? Oh, interesting.
I'm guaranteeing the Apple TV, which turns out now my intelligence was right on that from 2 years ago.
Yeah, you made a big deal about this fact that they were going to put an Apple TV in the TV. Actually,
yeah,
in a TV.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Apple TV is intended to be an LCD TV. And there's no difference between the 30-inch and what they're going to, so that's going to happen. But a netbook's got to happen. I mean, in Japan, the netbooks are free. You get a $40 a month Evdo plan, and you get it for free if you have a 2-year commitment. I mean, can you imagine if you could buy an Apple laptop, essentially, for $300 or $400 subsidized, $500 or $600 subsidized, what that would do to market share for Apple?
Oh, yeah.
I was on a flight just with this Virgin flight, and I would say 2/3 of the people were online on the flight of the laptops open.
Two-thirds.
There were about 15 laptops open.
Is that because it's new, or do you think it'll stay like
no,
that?
No. People were doing Gmail. People were surfing the web, reading blogs. I looked at everybody's shoulders, you know, and the other people who weren't were in Microsoft Word, like one or two of them, and then the rest of them were watching movies. And a couple of them were netbooks, and I'm seeing netbooks over and over and over again. I went to a couple of meetings in New York. One of the meetings, guy pulls out that Sony one that's really nice that fits in your inside jacket pocket. I think netbooks.
The P9?
Yeah, that machine.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful. It's a piece of art. It looks like
$900 and it's really slow.
And it's not a netbook.
It's not a netbook.
Don't call it a netbook.
Yeah, I think the Apple netbook will come. That's just a no-brainer.
Really?
I don't understand the desire for a tablet, because I figure once it's too big to fit in my pocket, I'm not going to have it with me all the time anyway. So
my friend Alex Lindsay says they'll make bigger pockets.
They'll re-architecture pants around this device.
Isn't that what they said about the Segway?
Yeah,
cities will be re-architected.
Yeah, totally.
Well, so when I use my Kindle, I have the same sort of feeling as I did way back when I used my first brick-sized cell phone, you know, and it sort of is made of that same color plastic, too, which just adds to the experience.
And what was the feeling?
You're right at the beginning of something great,
yeah.
You know, that you're using sort of a prototype device. No knock on the Kindle. I love the Kindle.
I have to say, the user interface work, I'm sorry to bring this back up, but the Palm has done in the pre shows me that a smaller screen, smaller device actually can be useful. I think it may be we don't need a big tablet if the UI is designed, purpose-built for this environment and is designed right for the environment.
Would you read a book on that?
No.
There's a lot
Would
of
you read a book on your iPhone?
I read on the Kindle reader sometimes.
Kindle's fine.
But it's more of a stopgap thing.
Oh, the Kindle app on the iPhone.
Yeah, on the iPhone.
Yeah,
the
but
app.
Yeah, it's not as good as a...
But it's wearing.
People don't read
Do
books.
You bring your Kindle with you everywhere you go?
Do you, Denise?
I do, yeah. But then I'm a girl, I carry a purse.
Oh, you have a purse. Well, all right, so maybe this is going to be the beginning of a new era in man purses.
I was going to say, introducing the Apple Man Purse. Steve Jobs returns with a purse.
I'd like to announce my new venture capital company.
I'm making
a line of purses stylized around the Apple logo.
I think it could be the case.
I think what Apple's if it fits Apple's pattern, what will happen is they'll say netbooks are stupid. Nobody wants a netbook. Then they'll come out with a device that is essentially a netbook, and they won't call it a netbook.
But it won't be a netbook.
We've created a new device that
it's a small,
fits
cheap
a
computer.
Whole new category, and we call it, you know, whatever they whatever I name they come
it's
up with.
It's not a netbook
because they didn't want to call the iPod Video iPod Video. It was iPod with video.
With
they made
video.
A big point out of don't call it iPod Video.
Right, with video.
I think it could wind up being the MacBook Air something, you know, like the MacBook Air Mini or something. Air Mini or something, you know, like a tinier version
yeah,
of the Air.
Yeah, extend that
clamshell,
brand.
Clamshell, you know, because they could make the Air with a smaller keyboard, smaller monitor, same frame, and idiots like me will pay $2,000 for it, you know?
The Air Puff.
Yeah. Traffic Mike says he read Boiling Point on the iPhone.
Oh, did you?
Is there? There wow. There's a PDF.
There's version. Two things to get over. One is I wrote the book. And second is reading it on an iPhone. That's a lot of.
All right.
That's a lot
we
of
have
speed
a ton of stories. This is one of the busiest news days of the year. Denise has some things to say about watching porn. We're going to talk about that. You can't say the word sex on Bing, by the way, if you're in India. We are going to talk about Digg has a new ad system where you get to vote on the ads. Don't you dare vote on our ads.
Genius.
Tony La Russa sues Twitter.
Stupid.
And maybe a conflict of interest in the White House. Is Google getting too cozy with Obama?
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
And we're done.
That's it. Thank you, Jason. You really just cut to the chase on those. And I think that's really important. There's a lot of news, and we're going to talk about it all in just a bit. And I do want to talk to Denise about it. I think you're going to do a twill on this. About this thumbnail issue on Bing, because this is a copyright issue that's just fascinating.
Yeah.
And Bing, by the way, took the lead over Yahoo. A guy who knows a lot about search, Mr. Mahalo, will talk about that as well. But first, I want to mention Squarespace, squarespace.com. Denise, have you moved your site over, or you're about to move your site over to Squarespace?
No, I've been moved over for, gosh, I think it's been more than a month now.
And?
Bagandbaggage.com is there, and I love it. It's wonderful.
This is really? I had never heard of them, to be honest, when they came to us, and I went over there. And the first thing you see when you go to squarespace.com is this amazing ability to create, you know, take a beautiful template, customize it with Ajax drag and drop. I mean, it just is incredible. It imports all your stuff from WordPress or Movable Type or Blogger or Typepad and exports, so you're never trapped. You've got, it's not a blog engine per se, because you can do a forum there. You can do a photo gallery, a form builder. They've got Google Maps, amazing stats. And you because they're using this kind of cloud architecture, they could throw more bandwidth at it at any time. You never brought down by a dig, for instance, just kind of infinite bandwidth. So you've been pretty happy with it.
I've been really happy with it. I was on Blogger forever, you know, since the cooling of the earth when they started 10 years ago. And liked it, and it was easy, and, you know, there was some loyalty there, and I met the people a long time ago and just never really wanted to move. But it was clear that I needed more. I needed a blog engine on steroids, which is sort of what Squarespace is. You know, I was kludging together sites and then linking off my blog to elsewhere to be able to send people to, you know, other information about me aside from just my blog entries. So this was able to package it all up in one place, and it's super fast, too.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, it's just smoking fast.
It's next generation website design. And, you know, it's a hosted solution, so you're getting the hosting and this amazing content management system. I'm getting so many emails from people who are saying, I moved to Squarespace because of your ads. I've never seen anything like this. I love it. People are just flipping out. I want you to try it free. Just go to squarespace.com/twit. Squarespace.com/twit. And if you decide to purchase, you'll get 10% off when you enter the code TWIT. TWIT. Now, there's also something else that they've just started. Starting June 8th through July 7th, they're giving away 30 iPhones, an iPhone a day. All you have to do is send out a tweet with the pound Squarespace hashtag. So do a mini review of Squarespace, put the pound or whatever, put the pound Squarespace hashtag in it. Squarespace will choose one winner each day at random. No purchase necessary. Go to squarespace.com/iPhone for all the details. So you can win an iPhone. You don't even have to sign up for Squarespace. Just put pound Squarespace in your tweet, and you'll be eligible to win.
Can I mention something about Squarespace?
Yes. I didn't know you knew anything about Squarespace.
I know all about Squarespace. Very cool guys from New York. They applied for TechCrunch 50 and weren't accepted because it was like a new version. We try to launch new things at it.
Right. Yeah, they've been around for a couple of years. Yeah.
I almost fell off my chair when I saw it. And I just want to take a moment, because we do this on This Week in Startups, to tell all the people who are fans of the show, This Week in Tech, should all say right now on Twitter, thank you to Squarespace, and then put pound twit at the end. This way the sponsor knows that, you know,
well, that's a good idea.
The thing. And if they see 100 people mention Squarespace right now, they're probably going to advertise more. And
they're getting great results. They're very happy here. And we're really
happy. Yeah, but why not, say thank you to Squarespace. That's something a listener can do that takes 10 seconds and really helps the show.
I never thought of that.
Thank you for saying that.
That's a good
point. Say thank you to Squarespace on your tweet.
For supporting Twit. Yeah.
Specifically for supporting Twit.
We appreciate that. How is that going this week in startups?
Fantastic.
I love the show.
Oh, that's very kind.
Yeah. No, the first time I watched it, I thought, this is like King Jason dispensing his knowledge. Come to Jason. He will tell you. Or the guru on the mount.
Life is not a bowl of cherries.
Ah, poor David Carradine.
Okay, a moment of silence.
A moment of silence for
Kung Fu.
We just had 47 people in the last 90 seconds thank Squarespace on
That's Twitter. Nice. Thank you, everybody.
Anyway, the show's doing really well. Thank you for not being cool about me borrowing the sort of This Weekend. You've been really a mensch about that, I have to say, because I did ask.
No, you asked, and I was glad to do
it. Times.
You should ask Mel Allen, to be honest with you. He's got This Weekend Baseball.
I also offered, like, hey, can I give a tributary or something? I don't know what the relationship is between.
But you know what? We'd like to broadcast the live broadcast at some point.
I feel like I've learned 95% of what I know about podcasting from you. Kevin's show as well, and I'm thankful that you're cool about me using the This Weekend.
And you're doing a new one. You're going to launch a new one.
I'm going to do This Weekend Advertising. Yeah.
Now, what will that be about?
It'll just be this. I think it'd be like more like the Twit format than This Weekend Startups. So This Weekend Startups is me giving advice mainly in an interview. It's not This Weekend Tech, but This Weekend Advertising will be like This Week in Law or This Week in Tech, which would be four people talking about social media marketing, advertising, whatever. And I'm not the host. I just did this because I want to watch the show.
Who's gonna host it?
My guy Tyler,
yeah,
who is a strategy guy. Yeah. I'm gonna have him be the host initially, and he's just gonna bring on three people and talk about advertising.
We do a similar show, but I don't know how similar it'll be, called Twin Media? This Week in Media with Daisy Whitney. Yeah.
Yeah, so this would be just focused on advertising.
So Lynn, let me ask you about this Dig thing.
This thing is brilliant.
This is really interesting, and I'm not sure what to make of it. So Thursday, Dig announced it was going to start allowing its users to vote on advertising. Now Hulu does it. We should point out the thumbs up, thumbs down on the ads it shows. But Dig's going to charge advertisers a price based on the user feedback. So the more the ad is hated, the more the advertiser has to pay.
Well, sort of the other way around. You get a discount.
Okay.
If it is. So they're not going to penalize you for having bad creative. Let's say you start at a $10 CPM. If it's really good, then you might go down to a $5. But it's not going to penalize you up, because that would be like short selling a stock. You have no limit to how much you can lose.
Doesn't this piss off advertisers?
Not if it's a discount.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if... I mean, do you think advertisers like the idea of the people voting? Let me put it this way. You're not going to see this on CBS, NBC, or ABC.
No, but
maybe that's its genius.
If you're stirring up your audience to, I'm gonna show those advertisers, I'm gonna hate their ads, they're gonna go watch them.
Yeah, right? You're right. Maybe it's not a bad thing.
More people.
It's like GoDaddy,
advertising into content.
They're going to make people want to. They're going to make ads that they hope people will like, and that's a good thing, right? Which is
that's clearly the motivation.
Advertising that isn't going to bother me. And we had this argument on Buzz Out Loud when I was like, "Do you like movie trailers?" And everybody who had been just bitching that moment before was like, "Well, yeah." I'm like, "Those are ads, but you don't think of them as ads because you like them." And that's what good advertising is. It's something that you don't think of as, oh, this annoying, intrusive ad. We only hate advertising because it's intrusive and annoying. And it has to be sometimes. But if you can walk that balance to where it's both intrusive but not annoying, that's a good thing.
Right. I stop my TiVo in the middle of fast-forwarding through ads when I see the Apple versus Microsoft.
And by the way, that
PC versus Mac ad.
TiVo records all that information and offers that for sale to... It's both its programmers and advertisers. Well, I remember we saw at Tech TV, they brought in a day, the screensavers, the graph of rewinds and stuff, and it's the most amazing information you ever saw, because it tells you in a much more visceral way than ratings, in a much more granular way than ratings, what people like and don't like. You can see there's a graph, and it spikes when something interesting happens, because people rewound and watched it again, and it goes down when they fast forward through stuff.
Wasn't it Janet Jackson?
Janet Jackson.
Yeah,
there was a good example. I rewound that about five or six times. I was trying to figure out what the jewelry was.
So is this much different, though, than what Facebook does?
Does Facebook do this?
They have you vote, yeah, do you like this ad?
But they don't give a discount to advertisers, or do they? Maybe they do.
Yeah, no, they don't give a discount. This is tying the money to it is a good idea. We tried this on Weblogs Inc. and Engadget back in the day, where we had AdvoPost, and we said, post a comment of what you think of the product, and only 1 out of 100 advertisers would ever go to it. Like you were saying, they don't want feedback. It's too scary. They can't even change their creative enough, a lot of these advertisers. And the agencies are building it for clients who don't even watch the store. So
now, if you dig down an ad, does it stop showing you the ad?
I don't think that's what happens.
I don't want to see any more GoDaddy ads.
That's the one.
They're gone.
Piece.
Yeah.
So ironically, though, I think some of the most effective advertising is some of the most annoying advertising.
Well, no, that's always been the case. Please don't squeeze the Charmin is famously successful, even though everybody hates it or hated it.
Well, it might actually be worth the extra money to the advertiser to have something that sticks in your head that you hate, but so many people hate it that that's kind of feedback as well. That's kind of something that...
Bottom line here is this is exactly what the hope was, that new media would be able to do some innovative, interactive stuff that would bring some value to both advertisers, content creators, and viewers, and this is an exactly... I mean, this is wonderful.
There's another reason why Digg is doing this, though, and other sites aren't, to be honest. And I don't... It's not meant to be a dig to Jay and Kevin. We're obviously all friends. But the truth is, the Digg audience is largely like an anti-commercial audience.
Right.
And the Digg format... So they have ad blocker on a lot of the time. Second, the Digg ads... The Digg system is the best of the web, which means if you try to put an ad up there, you're competing against the best of the web. That's a terrible thing for an advertiser to have to do. Advertising doesn't work on Digg. You know, that's their main problem. So they don't have a choice but to do something really, you know, innovative like this. People are not going to click on the ads on Digg when there's 10 stories about Ron Paul and boobies and, you know, 7 stories about what's coming out in the Mac tomorrow. The ads just disappear. How can an advertiser compete?
Not Digg. I mean, that's a problem everywhere.
No, so, but it's specific to meme trackers. Meme trackers are so good, the content, that it's harder to compete. It's one thing to compete on the New York Times site or Engadget when it's a lot of news, but when it's the best news, best of the best.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Magnitude horror. I know this because I did the Netscape.
I wonder if FARC has that problem.
FARC, well, that's why FARC put the ads in the stream.
Right.
They get paid for people putting stories in there, and they don't actually label it. It's a little bit shady, but Digg is trying to insert the ads into the stream, and by allowing users to vote them up, they can do that credibly, as opposed to FARC, which sort of did it on the slide. Not that anybody cares. I mean, it's boobies, you know, whatever.
I mean, advertisers in general face problems. People don't want ads. They do everything they can to avoid ads. Anything you can do to add value to the ads or add make it so that people pay more attention is a good thing. And this is an example of how new media can do that. I think it's
brilliant and it's well executed.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about Bing, Denise. Bing is Microsoft's new search engine. It was called Kumo. It's really, I don't know. Jason, is it much different than MSN Search? Did they really change the technology or is it just relabeled?
Yes. I think if you compare what they had before, it was probably they had like a 4 or 5 out of 10 if Google's the 10 in search. Now they have like an 8. So
I'd agree.
Catching up.
The quality's very good.
It's amazing what they've done compared to what they've done previously. It's not quite Google yet, but they're taking a lot of risks in terms of the design of it. So for that, they deserve a lot of credit. I mean, it is phenomenally well executed.
And by the way, beat Yahoo in search. Well, that's just kind of sampling.
Yeah.
But beat Yahoo in search.
It's a legitimate contender, and that is shocking.
And you've always told me, and I've quoted you many times, each percentage of the search market's about $1 billion in value.
Yeah, I mean, if that's why they were going to spend $40 billion to buy Yahoo's 20%. I mean, they were going to pay a little more because Yahoo has extra, you know, things attached to it, like their investment in Japan's worth a couple of million.
So Denise has a really good post on her logarithms column, the June 2nd post, in which she asks, is Bing playing fast and loose with fair use? What's going on? What's Bing doing?
Well, Bing is providing live video previews.
And as many a 14-year-old has just learned, by the way.
Yeah. So, you know, when you go and do a search with the safe search controls turned on, you'll see that when you mouse over one of the video thumbnails that you get in the search results, it's not just a screen capture of what's going on, but the video starts to play. And there's an interesting interview. The person who flagged the fair use issue was Andy Plesser of Beat TV. And he asked me if I'd taken a look at it, and I did, and then I put up my post. And Andy continued to look at it as well. The problem is...
Didn't Google get in a little trouble for the thumbnails in the search?
Google has had many, and lots of search engines search, right? have had lots of litigation over how much of something you can display in a search engine in order to index and then point people off.
But Google won that case, the porn thumbnail case. Yeah.
There was a porn case that involved still images that were inline linked.
Perfect 10, that's right, yeah.
Perfect 10 versus Google. Google won because even though they were showing full-sized images, and that's problematic under the fair use analysis. Under fair use, you're not allowed to detract from the market value of the original or to do something that basically replaces the need to go and see the original. So that's why this Bing video search is somewhat problematic. It appears play the full video of everything that's included in the search engine. Although, you know, I'm still kind of digging around in it, and it seems like for short videos, you're getting awfully close to the full thing. There's an interesting interview that Andy Plesser did with Stefan Weitz, is his name, and I just put a tiny URL for the interview. It's denise.howell.net/Bing. And there's Stefan talking about how they organized this video search and how they decided which parts of the video to display. And he goes ahead and says, we actually do try and pull out something relevant so that it's meaningful for you. Well, it's good, and it's dangerous from a fair use perspective because if you're replacing the need and disincentivizing people from actually going to see the original, if they can just sit there and happily watch the thumbnail.
There's the best of, yeah.
This is brilliant. The best of.
But the thumbnail only plays a few seconds, right? I mean, it doesn't...
Right. So this gets really interesting when you delve into the pornosphere. Because if you turn off safe search and you just do a search for porn...
You can watch that porn without leaving Bing.
And if they're pulling out what they think are the most salient parts.
Salient or salacious.
Let's just say, can I just say the mission can be accomplished with the Bing search result, if we just leave it at that?
The mission will be accomplished, yes.
Right. Which means there is no reason to go to the porn site.
Right.
Therefore, exactly. As a legal test, Denise, you would say if the mission is accomplished, therefore it's infringing upon their ability to do trade?
I don't know that the mission accomplished test was actually raised in
How about e-mission accomplished? Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have gone that way.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't get it, and I made the joke up. No, this is going to be shut down within a couple of weeks, guaranteed. This is way unfair.
You know, I was honed in on the copyright issues when I posted about this, but, you know, the real... outcry about it is parents and educators and libraries.
Yeah. No, I wasn't too pleased when I saw this because I do have, I'm using OpenDNS to block, but you can't block Bing. Well, you could block Bing, I guess.
Well, but maybe I should block Bing. It doesn't go into the porn stuff right away. You have to go in and turn off the safe search. Right?
But anybody could do that.
Well, yeah.
I can't force my kid not to use safe search.
Well, you can't force your kid not to use, or you could force your kid not to use the internet too. So, I mean,
there's safe search
in Google for images as well.
Yeah, I'm just saying I can put OpenDNS on my router and the kid can't change it, and then he's got a hard time going to porn sites. On the other hand, if he figures out he can Bing them,
Well, you can Google images. I mean, it's yeah. I guess it's a matter
it's a
of
little
degree.
Different.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's significantly different than looking at a still image. If
oh, really?
If folks are so inclined to go check it out.
I think that if you turn
know.
It's rather overwhelming.
I wouldn't know. It is.
To try
one of these. It is kind of amazing when you see these thumbnails. It's like,
don't you think that if you turn off the safe search, it turns it into the bada bing?
Hey-o.
Well, it's almost like DJ kind of a thing, because when, forget about the porn search, but anything you pull up, if you just sort of roll over it in a row, you sort of get this weird montage of
Because they don't turn off. Stuff. They keep going for whatever seconds they're pre-programmed or selected to do. So if you just swipe across, it becomes a cacophony.
Somebody's saying in the chat room, I seem a little paranoid. My kids are going to search for porn. I'm just using them as an example. They're good kids and they don't search for porn.
You're using the metaphorical kids.
Henry searched for boobies once, but that was it. He actually searched for Ron Paul's boobies, which I thought was a little strange.
Who hasn't,
after all? He found it on Digg. But here's an interesting thing. Digg, for some reason, has decided that you can't search for the word sex if you're Indian.
No, Bing, you mean.
What did I say?
Digg.
Digg, Bing. I'm, you know.
Don't disrespect the Bing.
So apparently sex is a high volume search string from India, ranking above 60 on a scale of 0 to 100 since 2004, according to Google.
It's easy to change your country, though, with Bing, apparently. You can just say, oh, I'm not in India, I'm in the U.S., and then you can search all you want.
If you say you're from China or Hong Kong or Singapore, no luck. Arabian country, no luck. But you say from the U.S., they say, hey, anything goes. Oh, you're from France.
And then searching for sex is much different than searching for boobies on porn. Yeah. I mean, you could be searching for health information or gender in, typing. There's a whole lot of other things. I know it's not as fun to imagine that you might be including that search term on that it's now blocking.
Is there a legal reason, Denise, that they might want to do this? I mean, do they have to do this for certain countries?
Yeah, the different countries have. And, you know, some countries are more restrictive than others as to what they will permit search engines to deliver. And then it's up to the search engine if they want to do business in that country, if they're going to comply with the local laws. And I'm sure that's why Bing has made this decision.
Yeah.
They'd rather not be blocked. Hmm. They'd rather not be sued.
Do you think this Yahoo lead is meaningful at all? I mean, it's just everybody kind of... Bing became the number two search engine on Thursday with a 16.28 share of searches.
I just went to google.in and searched sex, and I got a lot of results. Now, maybe it's because my IP address isn't masked. Huh. The Google...
In other words, Google's not doing it.
Yeah.
Do you have Safe Search turned on?
I do.
Because you have to turn on Safe Search
in
Bing.
A lot of health returns.
Health returns.
No, I didn't.
Did you get any
full
thumbnails?
Free porn videos and DVDs is the first result on google.in.
Thank you very much.
So as long as we're talking about international things,
yes,
somebody DM'd me right before the show with some breaking news from the EU, and that is that the Pirate Party has just got elected to a seat in the European Parliament.
They got, what did they get, 7% of the vote? They got a huge...
Is it proportional representation there? Is that how that works?
19% between 18 to 35-year-olds.
You know what the good news about this is? They're no longer going to have to cam the proceedings. They're actually going to have them straight to DVD.
So is this a response to the Pirate Bay prosecution? Are there real candidates being fronted, or is this just kind of a protest vote? What's the story here? They got a seat. They're going to have a candidate.
Exactly. I think it's a combination of both. I think, that this is a big enough issue and has been public enough there that people have finally just said, let's get some new perspective on these issues.
Deep Tear says the EU has been boarded.
Arr.
And I I'm reading the stories on it. It says votes are still being counted, and I think they might have had another candidate also from the party. So who knows?
Wow. I wonder if the candidates are the Pirate Bay guys or if they've got somebody else that they're running.
No, it's somebody else.
The Pirate Party.
Yes.
I think that sounds like a great party to be.
In related news, Boeing is running
like a pirate party because a pirate
doing well in Somalia.
Who's running for Senate?
Well, in related news, Boeing has just been elected to the Senate. Jenny Jardin will be representing Boeing contingent.
All right, let's keep on with the legal news. Tony La Russa is suing Twitter.
Fail.
Sign stealing, right?
Yes. He says an unauthorized page that used his name to make light of drunken driving and two Cardinals pitchers who died damaged his reputation and caused emotional distress. Filed a suit in Superior Court of California in San Francisco seeking unspecified damages. He's basically saying you didn't bother to authenticate that it was the real Tony La Russa.
In related news, he's suing Gmail for Tony La Russa 17. AOL Instant Messenger Tony La Russa 14. I mean, give me a break. This is the most stupid thing I've heard.
ARF is handling this case, the Animal Rescue Foundation. He's saying that this is because of he doesn't want a bad name.
It affects his big charity.
Yeah, it affects their ability to get adoptions. If people see this Twitter account and think that Tony La Russa is saying all these horrible things, they won't want to support ARF. What I don't understand is he says he tried to get Twitter to take it down and they wouldn't. And Twitter is usually very responsive in these sort of situations when they receive a request.
It's worse because this lawsuit includes a screenshot of tweets with the heading, "Hey there, Tony La Russa is using Twitter," with a picture of the manager.
And then it says, "Bio parodies are fun for everyone."
Oh, he left. He didn't miss that part.
Yeah,
that's the page you see if you went. It's the site. The account is down now. But if you went to that twitter.com/Tony La Russa, you'd see that. Anybody would see that though.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's
the problem. The problem with the lawsuit is Tony's probably sued the wrong party, as Jason was pointing out, that we have broad sweeping immunities in this country for intermediaries, like Google and here Twitter.
They're protected.
They're
broadly a carrier.
Protected.
Yeah.
But it raises a really interesting issue because Twitter is becoming more and more like some sort of domain name registrar.
That's true.
The names there actually have some meaning, and you know, there certainly could be trademark issues that could attach one way or another. You know, if someone is using your trademark or your name and likeness without your permission, you've got some claims. But to go after Twitter here is a little bit difficult.
Didn't you say that at one point, Jason, on this show, that eventually everybody will have a Twitter? This would be like the phone book for the world.
Yeah, my premise is it's going to be the global login system. It's sort of, and they're also going to launch a payment system. So it's going to sort of be like if PayPal and Facebook login were together. Oh, did I say they're going to launch a payment system? Can you edit that out of the show?
Yeah.
they're going to launch a payment system. And when they have a payment system.
I hear you're going to launch a payment system.
But are they going to launch one?
They're going to launch a payment system. And when they do, I could be like, you know.
What would you pay for?
Anything, just like PayPal. I could PayPal a donation to a charity. I could send you $20 that I owe you.
That's a good business model.
You could send me the $1,500 you owe me from the poker game, finally, 3 months later.
Screw you, Jason Calacanis.
Yeah, it's been
basically
15 minutes.
I'm invited on the show until Leo pays off his poker debts to me.
You know, Biz Stone has a post up on Twitter right now saying, "Screw you, Tony La Russa," essentially. No, seriously. It's called Not Playing Ball. He says, "With due respect to the man and his notable work, Mr. La Russa's lawsuit was an unnecessary waste of judicial resources bordering on frivolous. Twitter's terms of service are fair, and we believe will be upheld in court that will ultimately dismiss Mr. La Russa's lawsuit." Then goes on to talk about a new business opportunity called verified accounts, where celebrities at first and maybe businesses down the road will be able to get a verified account by paying.
They're going to announce verified accounts. Yeah.
Which goes to the concept of a payment system, which goes to the global login system.
I like the payment system idea.
This is where they're going to go.
I think the logical progression of that is really exciting. I think that if all of a sudden I have, you know, at Jeff Cannata on Twitter, and you can send me money that way, you can get to my telephone that way, you can get, that is just the way the internet knows me. And
it does raise this issue though, if Jeff Cannata or at Jeff Cannata isn't Jeff Cannata and I send you money, that's not good. You have to have a way of making sure that the people are who they say they are.
And it also means that if Twitter loses this case to La Russa, that business model is not as good.
Ooh.
Because who's going to pay for verifying?
By the way, that post you mentioned squelched rumors that the case had settled. That was all over the headlines a couple days ago, that the case had been filed and then immediately somehow worked out.
Sounds like it doesn't, that there's not much merit to this case.
There is not a chance in heck that this will ever get anywhere. Period.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be Twitter. you know, it's got some difficult choices to make. Maybe going down the monetizing your verified account is sort of the best scenario for it. But if they've got to put an infrastructure in place that manages this for everyone.
Oy.
Yeah.
Oy.
Oh, if they don't have to put an infrastructure in. What they'll do is, you know, if it's unverified, then there's a reasonable expectation, that, you know, just like the rest of the web, that you don't take it too seriously. I mean, I get spam all the time from celebrities or this or that. I mean, you know, no big deal.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. You could send an email right now that says,
exactly.
This is Bill Clinton.
What
and,
this is
give
this
me back
is,
my cigar, and nobody doesn't have to be real.
I'm guessing that this is some sort of a PR play by this guy because he's got a book coming out, or he's got his own.
Oh no,
something.
No! I think Tony's genuine here. I know Tony. I think he's genuine here. I think he may not get Twitter, and he may not understand. He's not getting good legal advice, perhaps.
And he's a lawyer.
What lawyer is he? True. Is he desperate for cash or something? Like, what lawyer would ever?
No,
tell
I think
you
he's. I think he's. Yeah. I think that Tony is understandably angry. He doesn't really understand what happened. As a lot of people don't understand Twitter and thinks that he's been impersonated in public. And
then send a letter and turn off the account. I mean, the fact that he's going for a lawsuit in
money.
He
says he did that. He says he did that. He says he tried to get the account turned off and it wasn't turned off.
How did he try to turn it off?
Well, we don't know, but that maybe that would give his case some merit if that's the case, right?
Yeah.
Right, and that gets back to my infrastructure point. How does Twitter respond to...
They don't have the staff. If they're getting 1,000 messages a day saying, hey, that's not my account.
They could easily have the infrastructure. There are companies that you outsource this to who handle it for you. You just, they can easily get through hundreds of these a day, and it would probably be under 100 a day, even for a service like AOL.
I only know one. Mostly Lisa tried for a long time to get Mostly Lisa back, was able to get it back finally, but it took a while. Do we know many cases of people saying, that's not my name?
Jennifer Leggio at ZDNet had it happen to her recently.
How hard was it for her to get her name back?
It was easy, but she knew folks at Twitter.
Oh, well, so that doesn't count.
I've helped like a dozen people.
If you've got an in, Jason, you can go to Ev and say, hey, dude, hey, Biz.
No, but it's not just that. They actually respond to the general email. I know people who've emailed the general email and had this taken care of. You know, maybe there was a window during the peak of Oprah madness that it took a day or two, but send a certified letter to their office. I guarantee they handle it. You know, and sending a certified letter to an office is a lot easier than filing a lawsuit, Denise, I think. Wouldn't that be the proper protocol?
Oh, yeah. I'm not behind this lawsuit being filed.
Always better.
What would be the proper protocol if somebody doesn't respond to an email to it? Because emails can get lost, you know, misplaced. Isn't the proper protocol before you file a lawsuit to maybe send 3 certified letters, 2, before
Certainly
you file it?
Something that's off the web. Yeah, something in paper.
We actually printed up letterhead. We never had letterhead for these kinds of things. We actually had to make, what do you mean? We have to send snail mail? So we printed up letterhead.
Well, and like letterhead is some guarantee of authenticity in these days, you know.
But you have to have it. I mean, you can't just send it to them on a line notebook piece of notebook paper.
I guess so.
You put something in mail, people take it very seriously.
Yeah.
Very seriously.
No, because nobody does it anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. I've sent... Literally handwritten notes on pieces of paper, like, by the way, I am going to sue you, like, sign Jason in a FedEx envelope, like, literally 2 sentences, stop, I am going to sue you, sign Jason Calacanis in a FedEx envelope to people. Once you do that, people behave themselves.
I have to try that.
I think the problem was that Tony La Russa just stood across the street and then patted his head 3 times and rubbed his nose.
You didn't see the signal!
What? Come on.
Are you blind? What, are you blind? All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with more stories for you in just a second. You are listening to Twit with the great Tom Merritt and Mr. Jason Calacanis, a.k.a. Maverick, Denise Howell from Logarithms, no B, and Jeff Cannata from The Totally Rad Show. I want to tell you about GoToMyPC right now. GoToMyPC makes it easy to remotely access your system. Of course it's easy. It's for the folks at Citrix. They know remote access better than anybody else. They pretty much created remote access back in the golden days of Windows NT, and they've been doing it ever since. GoToMyPC is easy to set up. All you have to do is open up your web browser right now. You can follow along with me. You'll have it done before I'm done. GoToMyPC.com/twit. GoToMyPC.com/twit. You there? All right. Now you're going to sign up, create an account. Once you get the account, then you go to GoToMyPC.com and enter your secure username and password. Click Connect. From any computer that you can get online with, Mac or PC. whether you're at home, at an airport, at a hotel, at a sketch internet cafe in the darkest reaches of the continent, you could just log on and there it is, your office computer or the computer you set it up on. You can access your email, send and receive. You can run any program, download files from one to the other. Couldn't be easier. You don't have to worry about configuration with the router. You don't have to worry about security. It's 128-bit encrypted point-to-point the whole time. In fact, this is better than a VPN. Try it right now free. Go to gotomypc.com/twit. I've known these guys at Citrix for so many years. I've used their products for so many years, and I know you're going to love it. So give it a try. gotomypc.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech.
I just wanted to give you an update. 600 people have thanked Squarespace on Twitter.
That's a telethon.
I'm not kidding. 600 people have thanked Squarespace.
Tote board.
Squarespace, you need to send two checks. One to Leo, one to me.
Yeah, I think so.
And then two, I just want to encourage everybody to do a second tweet right now saying thank you to
Citrix and go to my PC.
My PC. Yeah. Go to my PC, go to my PC and put pound twit at the end and specifically say go to my PC. I really appreciate you supporting user-generated high-end media that has Jason Calacanis in it. I mean,
Thank you. Yeah. With anything with Jason in it, it's good.
Absolutely.
Anything.
No, but really, with seriously, like it means a lot to support the show.
Hey, I want to ask Jeff Cannata because he was at E3. Anybody else go to E3? I think, Jeff, you're the only one here that was at E3. The big gaming convention was this week. You've been to them in the past. Is E3 yep. getting bigger, getting smaller? People seem to think this was the best E3 in a while.
I think I would agree with that. Yeah, it's definitely on the upswing as far as big to small. Last year was really much more subdued and low-key, and it was back this year to being a little more bombastic again.
It's not what you expect from conferences in this tough times. You kind of expect them to be sluggish and slow and people going, oh, hum, but the gaming is hotter than ever. Maybe bad economies are good for gaming. In fact, I'm sure they are.
Well, we're hitting the stride of all these consoles that came out a few years ago. You know, it takes a couple of years for the software developers to catch up on the new hardware. And now we're hitting really where these projects that started a couple of years ago, they're about to come out. And it's really showing off what these next generation systems can do.
Well, something happened that doesn't usually happen at E3. Mainstream media really picked up on the Microsoft story for two reasons. One, because they got Ringo and Paul together.
Always helps.
That's pretty big. They were
and
they
Steven Spielberg.
And Steven's all on the same stage.
And Yoko.
And Yoko was there.
Yeah.
A moving moment.
And Mrs. Harrison.
Mrs. Harrison?
No one ever remembers her.
What is her name? Is it Patty Boyd? No, that's the...
Son was there, too. I don't know his name. Something Harrison. The son.
So, the big announcement for Microsoft was Natal?
Yeah, they're calling it Natal, right?
Natal?
Yeah.
Not natal.
Not natal. Not prenatal. Not postnatal. It is, it's a pretty spectacular bit of technology, and they pretty much blew everybody away with their stage presentation. It's taking the controller completely out of the equation and letting you communicate with a system using your gestures and a three-camera system that includes an infrared camera. It's pretty awesome stuff.
But is it a product? Will it ever come out? And is there anything more than just a great demo in there? You know, Paul Thurrata does our Windows Weekly program, kind of went off on it and said, he's a Microsoft guy. He said, this is ridiculous. Come on. They didn't even announce a product.
A release window?
There's no product.
Well, Peter Molyneux came out and showed what Lionhead Studios has been working on, and he claims that will be a product, this Milo and Kate, I think it's called. He says that will be a game.
Did you use it? Did you get to play with it at all?
I didn't get a hands-on with it, no, but I saw the presentations.
It looks cool, but demos can be so deceptive.
Well, Brian
had Burnout up and working on it. So they had an actual pre-existing game working with the technology for people to use. So
what did Brian think of it?
Brian got to actually try it, and he said it worked. You know, he was limited.
It's a very controlled environment.
But he was able to make it work on him. And
Felicia Day used it, looked good with it.
They didn't calibrate it for him in advance. They could have calibrated it for Felicia. I'm not saying they did,
but he just kind of showed.
But he just walked up.
So what do you think, Jeff? I mean, is this going to be on our system soon?
Well, I don't know about soon. I think it's far off, but I think that's kind of a great thing about these kind of press conferences is that it shows you, it gets you excited, it shows you what the future holds, and And I think that, you know, they showed two applications for the technology. One was kind of that doing pantomime in front of the screen to pretend like you're doing stuff, you know, which yeah. I'll admit,
and, you know, we've seen that
silly.
Before. I mean, the iCam for PS2. I mean, isn't that the same thing?
The iToy, yeah.
iToy?
It is. And interestingly enough, PlayStation announced their own motion controller, which has been completely overshadowed in the mainstream press by Microsoft's announcement.
Huh.
I'll get to that in a second. But then the second application of the technology, which is what Peter Molyneux was showing off, is really something that allows completely new take on video games. And I think that where people get a little stuck with this from an imagination standpoint is going, oh, I'm just going to it's just going to be a replacement for my controller. So I'm going to be doing the same types of things, except I'm going to be pantomiming and there's going to be nothing in my hand. And that's certainly one thing they were showing. But the Natal also has voice recognition technology built in. And Molyneux was showing off this thing where you literally walk up to your television and treat it like you're looking out a window and talking to another person.
Mm.
So it's
that's
interacting
cool.
with games in a completely new yeah. way. And that person, this Milo character, this little 10-year-old boy that they had mocked up for the presentation, recognized people, carried on conversations with them, interacted with them, he was recognizing things they were wearing, the color of their shirt, for example. He could tell by the tone of your voice whether or not you were joking with them or talking seriously. It's pretty remarkable stuff. And I think that instead of concentrating on, instead of a controller, I'll be waving my arm around pretending there's a tennis racket in it. I think developers are going to take this technology and run with it in a completely new direction where video games have never really tread before. And I think that's what's exciting about it.
All right. And you think that this game, Milo and Nerdy, will be out soon?
Well, I don't know. I'm guessing probably more 2011.
Okay. But next year.
Sony also
No, wait a minute. That's
off-
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years.
If my math
I'm
is
guessing.
Correct.
I have nothing to base that on, but it seems like it's a little far off.
Okay.
But, you know, Sony also showed a motion controller that's more along the lines of what the Wii has been, which is sort of a wand or remote control looking thing, and much more precise than the Wii has ever been. And that was actually pretty remarkable, too. They were showing pinpoint accuracy and depth perception with that device so that it really could be the kind of thing that would replace in your hand a sword or tennis racket or lots of other things. And they showed a moment where the guy who was demoing it literally stunned an enemy and then lifted its head a couple of inches with the sword, you know, like put the sword under the chin of the zombie and lifted the head a couple of inches before striking it. I mean, it's very, very precise one-to-one recognition of your movement.
And this one would be out soon.
Yeah, they're saying spring of next year.
Well, I mean, I think we're going that way, right? I mean, it's kind of inevitable that we do something like this.
Well, there certainly seems to be the Wii's success has certainly started an arms race of arms racing. You know, I don't know. it's clearly the way all these companies are putting a lot of their energies in, and I think that it's exciting. I think the good thing about the 360 and the PS3's approach is that I don't think they're going to replace your controller. I think this is going to be a new, different way for games to be made, and they will be parallel to more traditional games, whereas the Wii really aimed to get rid of the controller altogether.
I love this video that Microsoft put out of Dad being the pit crew. So the girl gets to drive, and Dad's so happy changing her tire. And then
it's just like real life.
It's just like real life. And maybe Mom will be the highway patrol officer who pulls her over. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a shame that this stuff looks so ridiculous. And like I said,
it's not a shame. That's kind of a fundamental problem, is that you look like kind of a... I mean, look what happened to the Segway. You looked like a dork riding it. It never took off. I guess you could play this in the privacy of your own home.
If you imagine a game kind of like this.
Without anybody else around.
Yeah.
Dance Revolution in public.
That's true. This is not much different
than
that.
People who dance much better than any of us.
Maybe. I got a Wii Fit, and I got to say, I played it like once, and I thought, I'm never doing this again. This was awful.
Motion controller from
Nintendo
Sony, I agree,
this.
Jeff, is really good. Is it enough to pull Sony out of the basement, though? I mean, because it's still, like you say, it's pretty overshadowed in the press.
Well, I don't know if that that will be the thing that pulls Sony out of the basement. I think their incredibly strong lineup of titles that they showed this year will be the
thing. That's what they need. They need some games.
They showed off some amazing stuff. God of War 3 and a game called Heavy Rain and Uncharted 2. I walked away from that conference wanting to play the PS3 games more than any other console.
Yay. I really want the PS3 to succeed. I mean, I think it's a great device. It's a Blu-ray player. I have two. One right there and one at home. And I just think but it's really lacking in software. It just doesn't have anything great to play on it. So that's good news. You think God of War will be a good game?
Oh, God of War looks great. Yeah. It looks fantastic. Yeah. I mean, if you like really visceral, violent games.
Yeah, baby.
There's, you know, ripping heads off of people. It's pretty intense in slow motion.
And the reason that Paul and Ringo and Yoko were there was rock band Beatles.
Yes.
That's more my speed.
Clearly a large chunk of change was dropped on
Do you think this will sell? I mean, it's for aimed at people my age. It's aimed at people 50 and older. You think it'll sell? Dan's a young guy, our chat room moderator. He says yeah.
Yeah, because the Beatles are popular across a whole lot of
really?
Demos.
Young people would want to play the Beatles songs?
There's still huge Beatles fans in high schools and colleges.
Oh, all right. That's a relief to hear.
Beatles are forever.
they got a lot of press for it. It certainly was a successful thing to do. Well, cool. Thank you for the E3 report.
Let me mention one more game because it's really the Natal thing and Sony's motion controller. I think they're big deal because that kind of magic that it seems like, wow, we're really in the future. And there was another game that kind of was under the radar a little bit, but a lot of the hardcore press is picking up on, and it really captures that magical idea also. And it's a game called Scribblenauts. Has anybody heard of
Scribblenauts?
It?
Scribblenauts?
Yeah, like an astronaut, but mm-hmm. Scribblenauts. Mm-hmm. It's a game for the Nintendo DS, the handheld system. And it's absolutely, walking up to it, you wouldn't think much of it, but a few minutes playing it, it really feels like magic. What you do, you're a little guy in a two-dimensional world, and you encounter a number of problems or puzzles, and the way you solve them is you pull down a little keyboard and type in any noun you can think of.
Huh.
And that thing magically appears in the world, functional.
How do it know?
It has a library of thousands and thousands and thousands of objects, and they were challenging journalists to come up and stump it. And it's absolutely spectacular the kinds of things that are in that game that you outside the box thinking. Somebody mentioned they were having a problem getting past one of the puzzles, and they couldn't figure out how to do it. And they were like, you know what? I'm just going to go back in time to a point when this didn't exist. So they wrote Time Machine. And the Time Machine showed up, and they stepped into the Time Machine, and they went back, and they got a group of dinosaurs and went back into the Time Machine. Yes.
Oh, I'm so getting this.
This sounds so cool.
It's literally anything you can think of. People were writing Keyboard Cat, and the Keyboard Cat would show up and play. It's absolutely stunning. You know, Dracula, and somebody wrote a Cthulhu, and a Cthulhu showed up.
Wow.
You know?
I don't even know how to spell Cthulhu. That's amazing.
Is it available now or coming?
No, it's coming in the fall.
Cthulhu Madness.
I think the DS is a really great platform. It's really done well. Now, Sony announced its Go, right? Is that going to be important, or is that... This is the PSP, a little PSP.
Yes. It's interesting because they also announced the price point, which is $250.
Oh.
It's a little bit much for a handheld game.
A DS is 150?
Well, you can get, the new DSi, I think, is $179, I think, something like that.
Okay.
So it's, it's still a little expensive, I would say. But the PSP Go is a nice redesign. I think it's much smaller and lighter than the original PSP, but that price point just seems a little high.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, well, it looks cool.
Psychologically high, because it's above that
$199.
They should have made it $199.
Exactly. $199 is the sweet spot for something, and then you can drop it as the years go on.
Right.
But $250 seems out of the sweet spot.
I like that Scribblenauts. That is really neat. Is that for you or for your son, Denise?
I'm thinking both. I mean, it sounds totally creative for him, and I would not own a DS, but for having a little boy, and it seems like Jeff too. Tell me if this is right that they're doing a lot with motion and interactivity and that kind of thing for those small platforms as well.
Well,
we have a Tony Hawk game where you make it move by moving the device, and
Yeah, well, the big Tony Hawk game that was announced is going to deliver a new controller, much like, you know, Guitar Hero gave you a guitar. They're going to ship with a skateboard. But that's not for a handheld device. That's for
no.
You know.
But even the handheld ones, it seems like I saw a commercial on TV with Beyonce for some kind of rhythm game, where
it's called Rhythm Heaven. And the DS really started this whole revolution of new ways to input to all kinds of video game systems, because when the DS was announced, the touchscreen and the stylus were looked at as a kind of bizarre innovation, and that really set the stage for what Nintendo did with the Wii, coming out with the motion controller for that. And the DS initially, it seems very similar to me to what this Natal Target video was, where it was very conventional ideas of what you could do with the touchscreen and the stylus. And then as things went on, developers started looking at it as a way to create games that were not possible before, that did things that really, it wasn't just shoehorning existing games into a new control scheme. It was creating new types of games. And I think that's the exciting thing about all these motion controller devices.
Just out of curiosity, did Apple show up there? Because, I mean, seriously, I think the iPhone is turning into a gaming platform, and I'm wondering if Apple made any presence at all at E3.
Well, I didn't see Apple, but certainly there were tons and tons of developers showing off iPhone games.
Yeah.
And that has really been a place for independent developers or low-budget developers to really put out stuff easily, quickly, and cheaply on a device that can do really pretty spectacular games.
I would say the capabilities are even better than the DS, but maybe not. I think it's got a faster processor.
They claim that it's capable of better graphics than the DS.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Interesting. I like the idea of portable gaming. I really do.
Jesse Stay in the chat room, the Friend Feed chat room, says, Ray, scribble dots. If you type in Twitter, the fail whale comes up.
No. I love it. Okay, that's it. I'm buying it.
I think that was a joke.
if it's a joke, I bet Scribblenauts has it before they release.
Yeah,
it's very, very interesting. Very clever.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff like that. If you type in Scribblenauts into Scribblenauts, another version of your main character pops up. It's like they thought of everything.
That's
and the
handy.
Developers were there people were challenging it and writing down notes of things that people found,
sure,
things that weren't in it, they were going to add.
Wow.
So it's just... it's really cool.
There must be a lot of extra bandwidth in the DS, or extra memory in the DS, because to be able to include that big a database with all those objects, there must be a lot of extra memory in there.
Well, the key is
a simple game.
Yeah.
Let us talk about the Obama and Google. We go back to our stories. There is a story about Google perhaps getting a little too comfy in the Obama White House. Two senior Google executives have joined the Obama administration since the beginning of the year. Eric Schmidt is on the president's advisory board on science and technology. And now, concerned over the company's influence inside the Beltway, two consumer groups are opposing the appointment of a third Google executive to the White House. Consumer Watchdog and the Center for Digital Democracy asked the president not to move forward with the appointment of Google Public Policy Chief Andrew McLaughlin as the nation's deputy chief technology officer. Is this something that concerns you, Mr. Look at him with his cigar. Mr. Mahalo?
Actually, this is not good for Google because it puts them under more scrutiny. It would be much easier for them to lay low.
There are two antitrust investigations going on
exactly.
Right now, I guess.
So, I mean, it's just silly. It's like if they're... it wouldn't be so brazen as to add all these people and then try to skirt any laws. Google actually is not trying to skirt any laws. They have a couple of issues they have to deal with, you know, some of the stuff that we all know about in terms of these antitrust issues. But the reason they're adding so many people is because Obama is so tech savvy that he is bonding with the most tech savvy.
And who are you
going
to go
companies.
To? You're going to go to
so
Google, right?
Yeah. You can't mistake cause and correlation. I mean, there's a correlation between the fact that Obama is, you know, tech savvy and Google is the most tech savvy company. There's not some cause that, you know, Google is getting treated any differently. In fact, what's going to happen is Google is going to be under double the scrutiny. So Google is, if Google was smart, you know, they can't control their ex-executives, but if Google was, you know,
really sinister, they would be not involved, and you wouldn't even know.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Yeah. If you're the Illuminati, you don't take a role in the White House.
Well, that's a good point.
I mean, it's so obvious.
McLaughlin is not going to be employed. He's leaving Google, and this may be where he goes, but Google has said he's leaving us anyway.
Oh, that's interesting.
The big objection is that he is a former lobbyist, and the Obama administration made a big deal
rules?
About how they weren't going to employ a bunch of lobbyists. So, you know, the Consumer Watchdog and Center for Digital Democracy are both saying, hey, we don't care if the guy was from Yahoo or Microsoft. He's an ex-lobbyist. That's what we're mostly concerned with.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. All right, we're going to take go ahead.
Did you all see the Brian Williams special where he was cruising around the
I wanted to see that. Was that good?
So, well, what was so fascinating? It was good. It was very interesting to sort of get those one-on-one impressions from people.
I'm going to BitTorrent that. Now that the pirate party's in power, I'm going to BitTorrent that.
It looked like a startup in there. Everyone's sitting in an Aeron chair. Everyone's got their mobile device of some kind. Everyone's got their iPod dock behind them in prominent view.
It's a bad time. We had some young, smart people in there.
Thank
for
God.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm sick of the I don't read newspapers party in power. I want everyone completely tied in at every minute of every day.
They're probably watching Friend Feed even as we speak.
I think they're in our chat room.
They're in there. They're everywhere.
You don't know they're in there.
I want to mention a great advertiser, a great friend.
Oh, no, don't. No. And,
yes.
No.
Yes, it's time.
You okay? I'm taking my glasses off. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. No, I'm not
really?
Kidding.
Really?
Yes.
Is it that time?
It's that time.
Me.
It's the time Jason loves so very, very much.
It's that Scott just got real.
It's time.
Oh, I can't believe it. I've been waiting.
Jason, I think you just passed the mission completion test.
Yes.
Okay.
Mission completed
audible.
For Jason.
Audible, yes. Audible. Moving on. Audible. Let me tell you something about Audible.
Yes.
I just got another Audible book that I'm going to be listening to when I go to the World Series of Poker, which I may be playing in.
What? Tell us about that. Wait a minute.
If I can free my schedule up, I'm going to the World Series of Poker.
Now, that just means you start at a table, you put 10,000 in, and you hope you get farther, right?
Well, listen, the last three tournaments I played in, I got in the top 15 to 25, so it's not bad.
We'd love to be able to root for you in the World Series of Poker.
That'd be fun. I had sponsors for the last two. I got sponsored for the last two tournaments. Anyway, The Road is a movie coming out.
Cormac McCarthy. What a great book.
Great
now,
book.
I haven't read the book, but I see the trailer for this, and the immediate thing I say to myself is, this looks amazing. I start seeing Oprah's on Oprah's Book Club, blah, 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 and I say, you know what? I don't have time to read this, but I have Audible.
Yep.
So what do? Just 2 seconds, bang. Now I got it. It's sitting there on the iPhone. I haven't started
yet. Just don't listen to it in the public. At the end, you will cry. You will cry.
Listen, I'm sure I'm going to cry. Audible has made me cry many times.
That's why he has the glasses.
You know who shouldn't listen to it is you, Denise, because it's about... Well, maybe you should listen to it.
No spoilers!
Yeah! Okay.
No spoilers!
All right.
I love Cormac McCarthy, but I haven't read that one yet.
This one's about father and son. It's a beautiful book. Highly recommended.
On Audible. And there's two versions on Audible. So if you have the new membership and you get two and you love the book, get the second.
Don't get the same book twice.
All right, don't get the same book twice. That's insane. But you can get the Road, and like Jason, you can listen to it in the coming weeks before the film comes out.
And then get No Country for Old Men, the other Cormac McCarthy, or the Pretty Horses. You can really do a Cormac McCarthy fest.
I think this is what it's about, because you can get in there, you can really get into something. And let's face it, we all have eye fatigue from being on our computers all day, and we all have iPhones iPods, this and that. It's just so nice to sit back and have somebody else do the reading for you. When I'm on flights, when I'm in the gym, when I'm in the car in the Tesla, it's just what I do. I'm at the poker table. I listen to audiobooks on Audible. This is a genuine.
Can I tell you guys something?
Yes.
Feedback.
I just completed my third marathon.
Oh, congratulations. Wow, that's impressive.
Thank you. And the way I train for marathons is I listen to Twit and I listen to audiobooks. As I run.
Oh, that's great. What a great idea. I didn't even think of that. Yeah. Anytime you can't hold a book, you want to read, there's no reason to put your mind on hold unless you need that downtime. Listening to a great book is just wonderful. It's entertaining, but informed. You can learn. You can just... I thank you for this choice because it is... I actually have listened to this on audible.com, and it's a wonderful book. In fact, I didn't really like the print edition. I got the Audible edition, and I loved it. The Road by Cormac McCarthy. Get the unabridged.
Is there a sample?
Yeah, you want to hear a little bit of it?
Just a little sample, because I have it. I haven't listened to it.
I can do that. Tom
Taste.
Tom Stechschult reads it. He's really one of their best readers.
The soft ash blowing in loose swirls over the blacktop. He studied what he could see. The segments of road among the dead trees, looking for anything of color, any movement, any trace of standing smoke. He lowered the glasses and pulled down the cotton mask from his face and wiped his nose on the back of his wrist.
I gotta say, it's always better to listen to the book before you see the movie, because the book, especially when you listen on Audible, paints a picture in your head that becomes the story. And when you listen to a book, it's like a movie in your mind. I love it. Get two books. Get this and, let's say, No Country for Old Men, another great Cormac McCarthy novel, by going to audible.com/twit2. You sign up for the Platinum account. You get two books a month. Your first two are on us. And this is, I thank you, Jason, a great recommendation. The
and
Road.
Also, you don't, maybe not know this, but Christopher Walken also read this book. Here, let me just play a little sample here of that. If you, is it okay if I play the sample?
Yeah, Leo? Go ahead. Play the sample.
Play the sample. He lowered his glasses and wiped his nose and looked at the windshield landscape. The world was different. Wow. It's incredible.
It's moving. It's even more moving.
Wait, you can get the Christopher Walken as your third choice reading it. Anyway, we love Audible.
We love you, Jason. Thank you so much. Audible.com/twit2. Thank you. I got to do this. I have a, I don't know if you've ever heard this, Jason, but somebody made a special Audible jingle.
What?
For us.
No.
Yeah, let me see if I can find it.
That's impossible.
With you in it.
Well, while you're looking, I can mention the Sword and Laser Book Club will be announcing their next book in the next episode. It's probably going to be George R. R. Martin in Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's on Audible. In fact, all four of those, Storm of Fire and Sword of Ice and whatever it is.
Song of Ice and Fire?
Yeah, that all four of them are on there. I have. They're great. You know, listen to them and fell in love. She doesn't like these kinds of books. As Roz. Roz Savage is rowing across the Pacific right now.
Yeah,
she,
yeah.
These audiobooks are saving her life. And she's a huge George R. R. Martin fan because I had that book on my iPod when I gave it to her, and she said, "Where's the rest of them?" And I downloaded them just for her. It's about 800 hours. It goes on.
Yeah, he hasn't finished yet.
There's more to that.
More
that saga.
Apparently, yeah.
I think each of them is 40 hours. I mean, it's a huge thing. I can't find the one with Jason. It's so funny.
I think it's tinyurl.com/JasonLovesAudible.
You're kidding? Are you kidding me?
tinyurl.com/JasonLovesAudible. Somebody just posted in the chat room.
That must be, I can't remember who made it. It must be the guy who made it. Let me just type this in here and see if we can find it here.
That's hysterical. Is it like the jingle, like, Audible? Da, 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 da,
yeah, da. It's kind of, except that it's got you moaning in it.
Can I ask a question about book clubs, though? If you're in a book club, if you don't read the book and you listen to the audiobook,
that counts.
If you confess that to people, look.
On your way to work, on your way to school. You can't read a book, don't be a fool. Get Audible, over 50,000 books. Audible, I love them more than Calacanis. Audible.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Another one. There's one with you moaning in it, too. I don't
what? Is it Audible?
Yeah.
It's probably moaning.
Yeah, you go, oh.
Oh, Audible.
That's something we Audible. Didn't mention, by the way, about the Bing search. Full sound.
Full sound, really?
Yeah.
Hey-o.
Good callback.
Don't go to work and do those searches then, I guess.
Oh, it's in the Twit Live chat room. Here we go. Audible cow. Okay. Oh, that's another one. No, it's
Jason,
the same one.
I think you just created the music video for that song.
I think I did. Yes, somebody's going to play it out of the background. Yeah.
And if Keyboard Cat shows up, I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Why did I do that?
All right, last story. The news is out. Best Buy has leaked a memo that says Windows 7 upgrades will sell for as little as $50. This is,
awesome.
I think, exactly what Microsoft should have done. Starting June 26th, we're talking 19 days away, 18 days away, and Gadget posted this Best Buy memo. The official on-sale date is October 22nd, and the memo, which dubbed Windows 7 as more than, quote, just a Vista that works operating system.
Is that their tagline now?
It's more than just Vista that works. No, we've got even some new features. Pre-sale of Windows 7 Home Premium, Windows 7 Professional, $49.99 and $99.99, respectively. Buy the Home Premium, $50. That's for upgraders from Vista. That is what Microsoft, I think, needs to do to make whole all the people who had such trouble with Vista. So that is really, really good news. I hope that that's not a fake, but I don't think it is. I think Engadget's got a really good track record on these things. So
we got an email from a Best Buy employee
saying
the same thing before that post hit,
oh,
or around the same time
sure.
that post hit, so
that's
they weren't just sure. reading it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great news. That's I wanted Microsoft to do something like that, and that's actually even a better price than I had thought.
50, wait, what's 50 the price
bucks.
Exactly?
$50.
But see, this is what they should make all operating systems should be, like $50 and then $20 a year after that, and you just subscribe. So for the rest of your life, you have the operating system. I don't like this like spiky pricing and then it goes back down. Just make it like a subscription model.
Well, you want sticker shock. I don't know. Most people buy Windows by buying a new computer, so they never see the price. But go to Staples and say, I want to buy the full version of Windows Vista, and you will fall over dead in your tracks. It's like $399. It's insulting.
No, I did that and turned right around and left.
Yes.
And went and found an OEM version online at half the price.
Well, and that's what's dumb about it is because Microsoft is missing out on some sales by having outrageous pricing, I think.
And encouraging piracy.
Encouraging piracy, you absolutely right. Yeah.
Just make it easy for people. This is why the Android netbooks are going to crush it.
But this is what I have to say. I mean, you couldn't get Windows Vista on a netbook because it was such a pig, but Windows 7 runs beautifully. I've put it on a number of netbooks. It is it's made for netbooks. It really runs beautifully.
Yeah. It runs better in virtualization too, because I've got to run it on VirtualBox and VMware, both clean and simple.
It's
beautiful.
It's really good.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I got some ire because on a Mac Break Weekly a couple of weeks ago, we do picks, and my pick was VirtualBox and Windows 7, and I think a few Mac fans said, "What, you're insane?" But some of us have to run Windows, and it's really for free, a good deal.
What do they do for? What does this do for video games? Because you know that was like the reason I still have my tower PC here to the left, you know, and I have my Mac, and I switch them is because of video games. Is it Windows 7 is like fully compliant with all the great Mac PC video games?
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah,
yeah.
That's
been
your experience. If I were running it on a Mac, I'd probably run it on Boot Camp for video games.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't run it in virtualization.
But yeah,
right. Of course.
No, but the point is, 7 really is Vista. Vista drivers work. Compatibility is 100%. But it's lightweight, so you're going to get much better results with your games. Has that been your experience, Jeff? That the PC games run well?
Yeah, they do. And $50 is exactly the point at which I will rush out and buy it.
Yes.
Otherwise, I would have probably waited until the next time I upgrade.
Stolen it.
Well, and that's what people got to realize is your competition is not Mac and Linux. Your competition is BitTorrent.
Yeah.
You know, if you charge too much, most people who would buy it know how to steal it.
Yeah, they get a copy from their friend, or they borrow their friend's copy.
And I think, as I understand it, that $50 price is only for the pre-order. Like once it actually comes out,
so
it goes up to $99.
Okay, well that's good to know.
That might be something worth investigating. I mean, all this is rumor at this point, anyway.
Right. Right.
If Microsoft was smart, they would make this free, put it on the internet for with a subscription model on the back end or something.
Yeah,
like
you
that,
might be right. Yeah, 1 year. In effect, they've given it away free to everybody for a year. This beta is as good as the final version. So they did give the first one free, you know, in a way.
Yeah. It works until March 2010. And then it works for another 3 months, but shuts off every 2 hours.
Which is probably good. Really, get outside, get some fresh air edition.
Fitness program.
Yeah.
I like that way to that's a good way to enforce the copyright is like, hey, listen, you can still get your stuff off of it, but just you can't work on it for too long.
Yeah.
I think this is an important lesson for just pundits and also technology companies. Microsoft makes mistakes. Sometimes they look really stupid because they take a lot of chances and they go big and it's a big company. But man, in the long term, they solve things. I mean, Xbox, the next version of the Zune is incredible. Zune 2 looks beautiful.
That HD, I'm excited about that.
People criticize Microsoft. Microsoft's problem is they release stuff too often, too early. But that's a great business strategy, and so why should they stop? The Xbox people didn't like it.
The other thing we didn't talk about with E3 is all of the really cool Xbox Live announcements with fully integrating Netflix, Last.fm on your 360.
Yeah. They nailed
Facebook,
it.
Twitter on your 360. It's all smart stuff, and it's all free.
Yeah.
Microsoft nailed it.
Now all they have to do is make an Xbox 360 that doesn't keep me awake at night, and I will
doesn't
be very...
Doesn't sound like an airplane.
You can Twitter, you know. But if they can get a...
You can hear your movie. You can watch Netflix.
There's a company apparently making... I don't know if they showed this at E3, making a Xbox 360 case that is has all these heat sinks on it, and so it eliminates all the fans and stuff. I'm tempted, I have to say. I'd love to have the Xbox 360 in my living room or bedroom, but the thing is just way too noisy. It's in the garage.
I'm with you, Jeff. I'm really excited about that Netflix that you can search the catalog instead of being limited.
Oh, it's not. Wait a minute. I didn't understand that.
That's the big announcement. It's not just that you have Netflix.
But it does have to be a Play It Now. So, it has to be a streaming movie.
Yeah, it has to be a streaming movie, obviously.
But
you don't have to go to the web and make your queue up anymore. You can just search the whole catalog.
What is 1080p required? Does it require hardwire, or can you do it over Wi-Fi, you think?
HDMI, or I think would be.
No, I just mean for the internet access. You'd have to have a pretty good.
Well, they're saying streaming instantly. No way.
Yeah, this I don't.
I haven't seen it.
I don't understand that. Yet,
well, you know what it does. From what I've heard, is it does the little pixelation thing at first, so it's not HD until it catches up, and then it gives. Then it kind of upgrades.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah,
that's okay. Hey, I want to thank everybody for being here. You guys are great. Let's go around and give me your Twitter handles. Here's a chance for you to plug your Twitter handle, Tom Merritt.
You go to me first because it takes the longest.
Well, you got the most ridiculous Twitter handle.
Yeah,
so,
well, it's twitter.com/acedetect without an E in the middle. ACEDTECT. Or you can go to twitter.com/TomMerritt and find it.
Oh, yeah? So you have Tom Merritt
have
and you
Tom
still
Merritt,
choose to use just, Ace Detect?
It's a long story.
Jason's easy. He's Jason Calacanis.
Yeah. More importantly, /questions.
Yeah, that's good. That's the Mahalo Questions account.
Yeah, the best questions.
Great
so go
stuff
sign up
on
for
there. Pretty cool. Denise, your Twitter account?
D Howell.
DHOWELL.
And on FriendFeed.
And on FriendFeed, which I don't know. I know Jason says it's too complicated, but you and I are using. I see you using FriendFeed more and more. I really love FriendFeed.
Yeah, I love it too.
It's where I live now.
Just Jeff, speak the law.
Jeff, you are?
Jeff Cannata. That's JeffCannata.
You can catch Jeff on the Totally Rad Show at revision3.com/TRS with some guy named Alex. I don't know. You know.
Another guy named Dan.
Guy named Dan. Say hi to them, will you? For me?
Everybody.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah. Good. My old friends. Indeed. My old friends. You can catch Tom Merritt on Buzz Out Loud, their 1,000th episode coming up Thursday, but make sure you follow it.
Thursday, June 18th.
June 18th, not this Thursday.
Week, right.
Yeah, week from Thursday. It's bol.cnet.com.
Down to 200.
200 in two shows. I don't know what I'm going to do, Denise. I don't have anything planned. Well, I'd say we'll drink, but that's
good. The 200th show?
Huh?
I got the 200th show?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm hosting a party for you.
Oh, thank you. Jason Calacanis.
When is that, 2 weeks?
2 weeks. We'll just have everybody come in. It'll be fun. Yeah, we'll have a big party.
We have to have a 4-hour show live in a place in San Francisco, live 1,000 people. Let's rent a space and make a whole thing out of it.
That's actually a great idea. I don't know if we could do it in 2 weeks, but I appreciate the thought.
Come on, I'll give you Tyler and Alex. You get one.
With some good smart people.
We could
do
it. There, boom. Done.
Jason Calacanis is at mahalo.com, mahalo.com. But make sure you also follow his shows, This Week in Startups. Where should people go if they want to watch that?
ThisWeekInStartups.com.
Oh, well, that's easy.
Yeah.
All right. Did I miss anybody, Jeff? I talked to you. I talked to Denise. Oh, yeah, I'm Leo LaPorte on Twitter.
Thank the sponsors in your Twitter account. Right now, everybody take a moment, say thank you to Twit sponsors.
Go to my PC, Squarespace, Audible.
And Audible. Just thank all three. Those guys now are going to get hundreds of messages from you, the audience, and they're going to say, you know what? There's only three spots on Twit. We have to buy them for the rest of the year. And I'm telling the sponsors right now, we're going to do this every show, and you're going to need to buy these for the rest of the year. And if you don't send the check in advance, you don't get it for the year. Payment comes first, and then you've got it locked up for the year.
This is how he does business. I'm not quite so hardcore. Hey, I want to thank Paul Minshall at Pollywood, Pollywood.com, for making some ringtones. In fact, if you start your recorder right now, you'll get some of the new. These are the new Twit ringtones, everybody. Screw you.
Another one bites the dust.
Screw you.
Another one bites the dust.
Screw.
And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Yeah.
Screw you. Another twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can.
Round the horn.
Genius. Genius. Leo, your best moment ever. Literally.
You troll. You left out. You troll. You're a troll.
I think this is going to be the greatest remix ever. I'm telling right now. Whoever does the best remix of this, I'm giving him a ticket to TechCrunch 50.
I'm just trying to get the thing up, but I have a hell of a time. What blue screens? Like, forget it. I'm killing you.